All right, you're back in the DFSR here with our NFL podcast for Tuesday, November 28th. I'm Doug Norrie. That is
James Davis
from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com or DFSR.com for short. So head on over to the site. You can grab a free 3-day trial to our projection system powered by Lineup Lab. That's optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings NFL. NBA. Sorry, I'm getting lost in what I'm saying here. The thing that I say all the time. I think I was trying to say it a slightly different way than I usually say it, and then it just kind of tripped me up, and then I couldn't say it at all. So
that's cool, man.
Yeah, I'm doing okay. It's Tuesday morning.
that's interesting.
DFSR.com/NBA, whatever. That'll give you all the information. Free for 3 days, and then $34.95 a month after that. No reason to keep going through an ad that I'm stumbling through anyway. All right, buddy. Week 12 in the books. Pretty interesting football week. Really bad Thursday games for Thanksgiving, and then some interesting stuff from this past week that I want to get into, get your opinion on, because I think there were some, there were just some interesting performances that I want to know. I have very specific thoughts on them, and I want to know if your thoughts align with mine. Sometimes they do, and sometimes they don't. We'll talk about some things we disagreed about going into the week. I would say you had the more I was right calls of this week, of the last week, so we can get into
that. Very humble of you, buddy. I appreciate it. That 4 years into the business, that we're getting to the point where you can just come right on the podcast and say that. That's really big of you, dude.
Well, as we discussed before the podcast, if there's not one thing you can know from me is that I always tell the truth. So if I say it,
that's true.
I'm a truth teller by heart. I can't do anything but the truth. Sometimes it gets in my way because I'm so goddamn truthful.
It is just true. I mean, like if you were like recently, I provided a reference for you for something, and the guy was like, "What are some of Doug's biggest flaws?" And I was like, "Well, this is going to sound like a weakness as a strength thing, but the guy is unflinchingly honest. Like, if a criminal was holding a gun to his head and was like, do you have any money on you? Doug would be like, yes, I do. Yeah, so yeah. It's just crazy.
Just so everyone, it was not a reference for a job. This is my only job. So I'm not looking for another job. It's just for something else that the stupid government wants. All right. Okay, so let's get into week 12. So let's start off with this. Okay, let's start with some injury news and notes. Greg Olsen comes back, is going to get limited snaps, and then instantly just gets hurt again and is lost for the season. I believe he's lost for the season. I very much doubt they bring him back. It's kind of sad. I mean, he worked his way all the way back from I think a broken foot, and then all of a sudden plays just a few snaps and just re-injures it. We saw Funchess get a bunch of targets in the Carolina passing game. Do you think we just go back to him just being the main target guy? I mean, I had lowered him with Olsen coming back coming into this week, and then he went out and saw double digit targets. Do you think that you can ever trust Cam? And we had another bad Cam game. I mean, the bad Cam kind of showed back up again after I wrote him up thinking
hashtag bad Cam. I for one was shocked. I thought he had put those days behind him, but apparently I was.
Do you think we just revert back to seeing Funchess as maybe pushing up toward that like elite level of targets on a week to week basis now that Olsen's going to be gone?
Probably. I mean, keep an eye on Funchess. He did jam his toe in the Sunday game against the Jets. He says he's going to play through it, but he is going to probably miss some practice time this week. So, but yeah, there's certainly a lot of targets to be spread around. McCaffrey's another guy I'm probably going to keep an eye on for the same reason.
The other piece of news or the other injury note that's probably noteworthy is that it's a combo deal. Amari Cooper.
Yeah, Cooper and Crabtree.
Well, Cooper crazy. Goes down. Well, not laughing about this. Cooper goes down with a concussion and a sprained ankle. So that's how you know you got really lit up on a play when you just hurt both ends of your body. On the same kind of thing. So I'd be completely shocked that he played this week, considering both he'd have to clear away both of those two injuries. And then Crabtree and Tlaib amounts to be one of the craziest just fights that you'll see. Crabtree, for those that didn't see it, Crabtree goes out into coverage with Tlaib. He and Tlaib have some history together. Not the good kind of history.
Yeah, they were dating, right?
Well, no. I mean, there was jewelry involved because the last time they played, Tlaib had ripped off his necklace. And so this time Crabtree taped the necklace to his to his body so that Tlaib couldn't do it. And then Tlaib was still able to rip the necklace off. which I thought was pretty impressive. The fight spills over onto the sidelines. My favorite part of this fight, I don't know if you saw this, but my favorite part of the fight was when there's a 6 foot, 185 pound referee in the middle of all these guys that are just tumbling around the sidelines. And it looks like just the kind of way you get killed. And he had the fortitude and the stick-to-itiveness to be able to throw the flag while he's trying to break the thing up, like as if this wasn't going to be a flag to play. As if anyone,
my friends, I have bad news. That is a penalty. Right? You cannot do that.
If anyone was doubting at all that this was going to be a penalty, he was reinforcing. He's like, guys, I know I'm about to get just smashed into a million pieces between, you know.
I'm in charge here, and I'm letting you know right now that this is a penalty. This is against the rules.
There's like a 2 tons worth of people about to fall on me in this fight, but he throws the flag anyway. It looks like Crab. Crabtree is going to be suspended as well. The Oakland still has a really high line coming into this game. They have no receivers, and yet they're playing. This is the old, which is going to be worse because they're playing playing the Giants defense, who is just kind of has had moments of just being completely horrible. How do you see this? I mean, yeah, I know it's really early. Do you see a way for this to shake out where all of a sudden there's a lot of targets to go around to a wide receiver core that's going to be facing a pretty bad secondary with Janoris Jenkins out?
Yeah, Cordero Patterson, 8 targets over the last 2 weeks. The guy's shown talent in the past. He has also shown a propensity to catch his little bubble screens. And that's, you know, it stands to reason that no one else is going to really be able to learn the playbook to go actually run down the field and catch long passes in time. So that's one guy. Another guy is Seth Roberts, 9 targets against New England 2 weeks ago. Dropped down to just 3 last week against Denver. But weird things can happen against Denver in the passing game. So given the absence of both Cooper and Crabtree, I think those are the top two guys I'd be looking at.
Yeah, for sure. I was just really surprised by the line. I mean, like, just the Oakland has struggled at times anyway to score, and now all of a sudden they're missing the two, arguably the two best just skill position guys, because you really can't count any of the running backs as being in that class. So, and still, yeah, projected for somewhere around 25 points. So it does stand to reason we're going to be getting value from that game. And I'll kind of try to shake it out of the tree as we go, as we go into the cash games for this week. And I think I probably agree with you that Roberts and Patterson, maybe some Jared Cook as well, are going to probably see the lion's share of the uptick there. For as far as injuries goes, I think that was basically it. There weren't an overwhelming amount of injuries. There were some interesting.
Yeah, Beathard is banged up, I think, going into next week, but that doesn't matter for fantasy purposes.
Denver switching its quarterback again. That doesn't matter at all. I mean, they're on their fourth quarterback already this year, which is pretty impressive. Okay, so let's get into some performances. The main one I want to discuss, and this is, I don't know if it's a polarizing thing. It feels polarizing because I feel like everyone's kind of wrong about this, and me and a couple other people are kind of right about this, but I'm wondering your thoughts on Alvin Kamara. So Alvin Kamara obviously was the fantasy player of the week this week.
Great lead-in, by the way. And some people think one thing. Me and a couple other people are right about this, but I'm curious to know what you think. So, okay, let's find out if I'm going to be right or wrong. Go ahead.
So this is punctuated by, you know, going into the week, some people were high on him going into the week. Some family members of mine included, who I was able to trying to talk them out of playing him, because my question was about mostly about usage. He goes out and is clearly the fantasy player of the week in all GBP winning lineups. Do you think now he's now one of the most expensive running backs on the board? He's been fantastic this season on a per touch basis. I'm wondering your thoughts on this thing being sustainable, being an outlier somewhere in the middle. I mean, what are your thoughts on Kamara's performance here?
Well, I have a mixed thoughts about it, because I believe that my personal take on Kamara was both right and wrong. So the wrong thing that I didn't notice or lend enough credence to probably was how he's being used in the passing game and the effectiveness of those passes. Because a lot of times you see a receiver with like 4 or 5, 6 receptions, you just figure he's going to get like 30, maybe 40 yards or something. But Kamara has actually been turning those receptions into big time yards. I mean, the fewest yards per catch that he's averaged, let's see, since the Green Bay game. So that's 7 games, is 6 yards per catch. So that's pretty darn good on its face. And every other week, it's been considerably better than that. He definitely has upside once he catches the ball and starts running with it. The 6 receptions for 101 yards and a touchdown is certainly on the high end of what you can expect there, but it's not out of the realm. I mean, he had 6 for 74 the previous week, 6 for 84 and a touch the 2 weeks before that. So I think there's certainly upside with Kamara. He's obviously explosive once he has the ball in his hands, and he touched the ball 11 times a game. And so you cannot play him for $8,500. So I think it was still correct not to play him in a timeshare last week. Like, I wouldn't go back in time if you told me Kamara's going to get 11 touches this week. That's the fewest touches he's had since the Chicago game on the 29th. I wouldn't have been excited about running him out there for $8,100. And so the fact that he just happened to turn those 11 touches into almost 200 yards and 2 touchdowns, I don't think is going to be what you can expect from him going forward. So I'm a big time seller on Kamara, and I hope to see high ownership from him going forward.
That's exactly where I land too. It's not a referendum on his skill. He's excellent. So it's not that. It's not in a vacuum. It's including the price that you're getting on a guy who, now look, those series that he scored the long touchdowns on, was he going to be the plan during those series? Probably. So the touches are probably low. This is what we said about Kareem Hunt at the beginning of this. We're going to get into this loser in a second. But this is what we said sort of about Kareem Hunt in the beginning of the season, was trying to factor where these long runs stood in your overall usage, because you're not a favorite, obviously, to break off 60, 70 yard runs. But there stands to reason that you were going to be maybe the plan in those, in the, in between yards had it just gone for 20 yards the first time or 15 yards or something like that. So I do think his touches were low. His gains were completely outsized and unsustainable. And now he's sitting, when going into week 13, he's sitting as the fourth most expensive running back on the board. This is on FanDuel at least, behind Bell, Gurley, Fournette, and then Kamara. And I really am going to be interested to see where people land on this, because it feels complete insanity to play him over the other guys that I just listed above, and possibly even some guys below him. And I think people will, because they get trapped into thinking that he's just the kind of talent that can make this thing happen over the long term. And that,
see,
and
but this is the trap people fall into, because it goes back to an old poker adage, I guess, that I'm reminded of from my poker days, which is when you see someone winning an unusual amount of money, there's an incredibly high chance that guy is lucky, but some chance he's the best player you've ever met. And so you don't want to discount that. And so in the realm of poker, like, sometimes it happens, and because you can lose everything, right? So there's this big risk involved in not accounting for that extremely small but very important chance that the person you're meeting is actually just better than anyone you've ever played with before. But in the realm of daily fantasy football, we get the opposite effect, actually. We want to be concerned way more about the guys who just show up and are being lucky, because in the case of a guy like Kamara, there's either one of two things. Either he is probably the best per touch running back ever, right? That's one chance based on his recent performance. You could look at him and say, you know, there just simply aren't a lot of running backs that can roll out and just have five rushing attempts for 87 yards and, you know, 12 for 106 and 10 for 68 the weeks before. Or we can say, it's a 5-game sample size, and ultimately he's much more likely to go back into scoring 13 fantasy points a game or fewer if he doesn't punch these into the end zone, in which case he's probably worth more like 7,000 or less. And so I tend to believe that he's probably not the best running back of our generation. That's my personal opinion, and I could be wrong. I probably will be wrong on that at some point. I said the same thing about Kareem Hunt when he was exploding earlier in the season, and, you know, guys tend to be not that much better than everybody else, I guess, is the thing, right? These are all, every young athletic person in the U.S. wants to play professional football pretty much. And when they get them all together, it's just hard to be that much better than everybody else. So I personally think that Kamara will be just totally regular going forward.
The good news on Kamara, for the people that want to play him, he did outsnap Ingram last game for the first. That's the first time that had happened since the beginning of the season, I believe. So if they think that they're going to trend his snaps just to, for him to be more of the every down back, I mean, part of it was because they were playing from behind and he's just more explosive in the passing game. So that, I tend to think that was probably what was going on there. Anyway, so just saw a lot of differing opinions on Kamara's performance.
Don't play him going forward. That's the correct opinion. I'm now feeling adamant about this as well.
Another guy that you have been insisting to not play for weeks and weeks and weeks, and you...
Three straight weeks. I went to have to go back and listen just to be sure to for my gloating on this podcast. But yes, three straight weeks I've been adamantly opposed to Kareem Hunt.
Right. You've been opposed to Kareem Hunt. You've been completely correct each time along the way, each stop along the way in terms of his, just in terms of his price and his performance and just sort of where the team was going to be, even though a lot of external factors lined up in his favor, i.e. Big home favorites and bad defenses. And it just really hasn't been there in him. I guess we don't really need to discuss it here. He's down to 6,900 on FanDuel. So the price is going to keep getting lower to the point where, look, there's a price to play everybody, right? If Kareem Hunt was 4,000, we'd probably play him. So it's not that he's completely unplayable. People are like, people that want to make the claim that someone is, you know, a complete stay away, or, you know, auto X list or whatever silly terms people use to describe the feeling of never wanting to play anyone ever again. Do you think there is, going forward, a price at which we can play Kareem Hunt? Like, he only saw 12 total touches last game. He ceded a lot of usage, especially late game, because they were losing to Charcandrick West. Do you think there will be a price for the rest of the season that we can play him at? I mean, 6,900 are we just completely done with this guy and he needs to... Oh man, I hate saying this because I always want to be early on some of this stuff, but, you know, do we need to see it happen again for him before you can, I don't know, confidently go back and play a guy like this?
Yeah, I mean, he's basically like a poor man's Orleans Darkwa, if you look at the game logs. So what's a good price for Orleans Darkwa that I would be excited to play him? I don't know, 6,000 maybe, 5,800 in a great matchup. So figure for Kareem Hunt, it's in the same territory. I mean, there's just nothing indicating that he or the Kansas City Chiefs are capable of getting him big games anymore, right? I mean, last game, this is again, because some people make the game script excuse with Hunt. Some people want to point to, you know, just whatever, the bad coaching or bad quarterback play, you know, whatever the different reasons are that you can point to. None of those factors have changed. In fact, he's coming off 2 weeks against arguably the two worst rushing defenses he played all season. Last week in a 6-point loss, he touches the ball 12 total times. The previous week against the Giants, he's losing touches to Charkandrick West. So I don't know why I'm playing Kareem Hunt on any given week, other than the fact that he had three good games to start the season. If you mix those three good games throughout the rest of the season, well, actually, that'd probably be better, because then you could at least be hopeful that he's still capable of doing something like that. Instead, it's been, it's been a decline in performance. It's not quite linear, but if you painted a graph, it would basically just be a straight hill going down, and then it looked like someone jumped off the cliff at the end into the ocean, and that was last week's game against Buffalo. So yeah, I think you can. I don't personally think there will be another time I will be able to play Kareem Hunt, because the price isn't going to go too much lower than it is right now, and I still don't think this is a fair price.
You think it's too high? You mean 6,900?
Yeah, of course. I think it's a bad price. I mean, he's playable for big tournaments, I guess. But I don't know why he would be one of the two running backs I played in any given week.
Yep, that's fair. And he's down into a group of pricing, at least on FanDuel, with guys like Lamar Miller, Latavius Murray, Tevin Coleman, though Freeman's going to come back. Joe Mixon, he's in that same price tier with. He's a guy we could probably talk about a little bit. Mixon is a guy our system had been keying in on very close. He was like in our second overall DraftKings lineup, a guy that we've been keying in on for some time in terms of just we. At some point, it really seemed like the way the Bengals were just intent on using him, and where the snaps increasing every week and the touches increasing every week, that there was going to be a week where things just kind of did work out for him. And last week was the week he had his best game of the season, where he ran the ball over 20 times, caught some balls in the passing game, finally scores a touchdown in the run. Do you think he's a guy? Yeah. So he, in the last 2 weeks, has ran the ball 23 and 20 times total, and also caught 5 total balls. He's going to face Pittsburgh this week. Do you think we're probably going to be off of him just because of a potential game script? Pittsburgh is a favorite in this game. What are your thoughts on Mixon going forward?
Yeah, I think Mixon is like Kareem Hunt with more opportunity, basically. And I think that makes him a better play on average than Kareem Hunt in any given week. And this is not a great opportunity to play him. So I think that, unfortunately, you take those factors together, and we may have, guess the wrong weeks, I guess, on Mixon in the past. That'll happen. Like, a system will like the guy. You happen to play him in the weeks he's not that great, and then you kind of miss him in the week he breaks out. It's football. There's only 12 games so far, 12 slates. So you'll tend to miss out on stuff. But yeah, I think your observations about his increased workload, like, that really came to a head. So I think that was definitely a good call in the past, and we'll just see what kind of price we can get on him in the future.
The final big game, or one of the other probably notable games here, was Jamal Williams for Green Bay. Saw a ton of snaps against Pittsburgh in a game that really didn't seem like it was going to line up all that great for opposing running back, simply because Green Bay was huge underdog. They were on the road in this game. And then he went out there and he touched the ball a bunch. Looked like he got like some of that combo deal of like what you wanted to get. It was basically a three down back, like what you were trying to get out of a combination between Aaron Jones and Ty Montgomery, who are both out, and it looks like they're both going to be out again this week. Is Jamal Williams at 21 rushing attempts and 5 targets? Do you think Jamal Williams might be starting to enter that group of in this case, he's kind of last man standing because they just don't have anybody else, but they also don't seem all that willing to want to throw the ball with Hundley. And it's just, not, I mean, there aren't many guys in the NFL that get 26 touches in a game. Assuming Montgomery weren't to play, wasn't all that close to playing this week, and we know Jones is out. Do we start putting Jamal Williams back into that group, or up into that group of sort of every down back kind of big usage guys?
Yeah, I really like Williams going forward, actually. 20 plus touches in 3 straight weeks now. Two of those against very tough defenses for his position, but Pittsburgh and Baltimore. I think as you're projecting him out going forward, I don't expect that he'll be extremely good on a yards per touch basis, but the touches seem to be very steady. And there are a lot of game scripts where he's involved, particularly because he's catching balls out of the backfield too. So yeah, I think Williams represents probably the overwhelming chalk running back going to this week. I mean, I haven't looked at it too closely just yet. It's only Tuesday and we still have basketball, et cetera. But yeah, I think Williams is a phenomenal value at 5,700 on FanDuel next week.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like the price moved enough. And the reason is because that pricing was out prior to the Sunday night game, right? Or excuse me, the Sunday night game. So they're feeding the pricing, I believe, already before that primetime game is starting. And then all of a sudden he has a huge game. So this is where you get to see, maybe you get the buy low. Now, again, it's going to matter about Montgomery. If Montgomery were back in there, I think he would probably see some of those pass catching opportunities, just because they're just another guy and most teams don't want to run their running back for an entire game. So just another interesting performance. Let's go over to some of the wide receiver performances. I mean, Julio went completely ham this week. He was kind of a chalky play. We weren't as high on him as some other places. Do you think we missed something in not having more exposure to this Julio game?
I think Julio is closer to the lineups than you remember. He was actually showing up in the 1 p.m. only lineups. He was showing up on, I think it was like the 6th DraftKings lineup. I can't recall exactly right now, but yeah, Vegas had a good prop on him relative to his price. I think one thing we've said about Julio in just looking back retrospectively over the course of his performances on the season is that you're going to get him some weeks and then you're just going to not get him at all other weeks. And that continued to bear out here. I mean, we didn't know if this was going to be one of the big weeks or one of the bad weeks. It happened to be one of the big weeks. The Falcons are definitely one of those teams that when they get a matchup that they're exploiting, they can go pretty deep on it. The Steelers will do that with Brown. But yeah, I mean, they saw something here in Tampa Bay. Julio's posted huge games against Tampa Bay in the past and then kind of like gone back to being just a regular, very good wide receiver as well. So I think some of the indicators were there, you know, good targets, average 10 targets the three prior weeks, comes out and gets 15 here. I think probably we were a little bit low on Julio's targets overall, but you know, that kind of thing happens.
Yeah, I had it for 10 targets, which is higher than a season average.
Yeah, I think that's actually spot on. Yeah, if we were on 10 targets, then I think that's the right
number. Yeah, and it's higher. I've trended his targets higher than his season average just because he's the guy that's usually worth it to do that with. I don't like to do that with all guys just because it just is typically not correct to just, I don't know, go out on a limb on when you think you're going to grab, I don't know, the extreme upside on a guy. But Julio, for most of the season, has struck me as the kind of guy that is worth doing it because – I don't know. He's a chalky kind of name in general. And we have long histories of seasons after seasons of, you know, kind of disappearing for a period of time and then just having this kind of game, 200 yard game with two touchdowns where it looks like he can't be stopped. The wide receiver's throwing him touchdowns, the quarterback's throwing him touchdowns, everyone's throwing him touchdowns. So great game by him.
Yeah, agreed. Well, and I think it's interesting on Julio too. And this is why I think, you know, in figuring out targets, I think a lot of people, targets and carries as well, a lot of people like to think about the average. And I think that's actually the wrong way to go about determining targets. And, you know, we see this in basketball as well. I think median is a much better way to figure if you're just painting with a broad brush. You know, we go with news, we apply a lot of subjective measures as well. But I think a median is a lot stronger in this regard because, like, take the 4 target game he had against Buffalo. That's effectively meaningless, right? Like, you know, if he's going to get 4 targets for you or 6, you're probably dead either way. So you don't need to overly penalize him for one game where he disappeared completely, because in football, you're really hoping to figure out in a regular old game, he goes out there, what's the plan? How many targets is he going to have in any given moment? And I think as you look over Julio's game scripts over the past, you know, 12 games of the season, basically, you can see that the plan is to get him something like 10, probably plus targets. And so I think that's a much more precise way of trying to project things going forward. I think average just leaves itself at the whim and fancy of, again, since there's only small sample sizes that we ever deal with in football, you leave yourself disproportionately subject to outlier performances. I think you can go the opposite way on a guy like Kareem Hunt, right? If you continue to take his averages, well, he's a tremendous deal, right? I mean, he's averaging 16 fantasy points a game on the season, but we know that that's totally front loaded in these 3 crazy games in the beginning of the season. If you go more by the median performance, he's more like a 12 or 11 fantasy point guy on an average game. And so I think that would be if people that are modeling at home and not for whatever reason going to dfsr.com/NFL and using our product, that's a much more precise way to do it for your own personal practice.
Well, sure. Just so you know, his median targets is 9. So, I mean, would you stick with that? That means we would have been even lower on him. I just want to know. I look, this is case specific, and I think in general you are correct, and I agree with that assessment. If you look at his performances this year, his median performance is 9. It would have been. Okay, I take that back because I'm counting last week's performance. So actually, it might have even been lower. Do you still stand by that assessment, knowing that the number looks like it would even be lower using that metric?
Yes. And I think only because, again, when we're, so median is a precise mathematical term that has a definition. So that's good to pin me to that. It's more like using that as a starting point and then applying, you know, the the expert level subjectivity to say, well, what's the plan in any given week? And I think you can also, you know, there's much more to be learned by what an NFL team's plan has been in the very recent past, rather, again, than going back to the beginning of the season. And Julio is a little different because he's kind of a known commodity, you know, but yeah, I think you can look at the recent past, what's been working in Atlanta, and say the plan in an average game is to get him 10 plus targets.
Yeah, sorry, I wasn't trying to put you on the spot. I was just more.
That's okay. That's totally fine. And I think, you know, again, it's just why you have to use subjectivity. You can't just be sitting around just taking averages and only using spreadsheets and stuff like that. This is what makes DFS hard.
Oh, yeah, sorry. And by the way, the median over the short term of the last 6 weeks would have been 10. So bingo, got it all right. All right. Any other things stand out to you this week? We talked about the Julio performance. Antonio Brown had a huge performance. Some other kind of big targeted guys. I'm clearly picking out, just cherry picking the top performances and saying those are the things that stood out to me. So that's not lost on me, except for the Kareem Hunt disaster. But anything else kind of stand out, good or bad, coming out of week 12 in the NFL?
Yeah, sure. I mean, so some guys people are going to look at going forward, I think rightfully. Cooper Kupp was a guy a lot of people are on, including us. He went out there 11 targets, turned that into 8 catches and 116 yards of receiving. The guy's totally legit going forward. I think, you know, he was the obvious beneficiary of Woods going down. He was going to get those targets. I think he even outperformed what most people expected. So expect to see pretty high ownership on him going forward. Some other guys, DeAndre Hopkins went out there. You know, people have been concerned about the cornerback play. Another solid week, hooking up with Savage 7 times for 125 yards. Crowder was good again. I mean, this is some of the Thanksgiving stuff too, but Robbie Anderson's another guy. I don't know. The Jets haven't really been able to support any wide receivers this season. Anderson goes out there, gets 6 catches for 146 yards and 2 touchdowns. You have any interest in him going forward?
I'm just checking a stat on him because I want to make sure I heard this correctly. Yeah, Robbie Anderson's caught a touchdown in the last 5 weeks, and he caught two last week. When you watch his catches, a couple of things. He doesn't have great conversion. His conversion rate is not all that good. It strikes me as sort of lucky with these long touchdowns. He's just not a possession guy. He's a downfield threat, and they do get him in the downfield sets, and it has been working. I would say that he is outsized on the touchdowns, and it's just unlikely to continue because he's not a red zone touchdown target for them. Like I believe most of his touchdowns have been to the tune of 25 plus yards or something like that. I'll double check that.
He's a downfield guy. I think the conversion thing is perhaps a little unfair. I mean, he's got 20 receptions in 29 targets in the last 4 weeks. Like, that's pretty good.
Okay, fair enough. I was maybe looking more at his like what looked to be more like
career averages or whatever.
Or this year it was like more like 55%. I'm just kind of doing it in my head. But it looked worse going forward.
He's got that one bad game against New England. Yeah, but I think in overall, like, he actually converts a surprising number of these downfield balls into catches and was definitely a lot more erratic earlier in the season. I think for him, you have to buy that there's been some kind of transformation in their ability to connect in the last 4 weeks. Because, yeah, prior to that, it was pretty grim.
Yeah, in general, these are like just the wide receivers I just don't like to target just because the targets just aren't high enough just to sustain where their price has gone because of the touchdowns, usually. I mean, I haven't looked at them too specifically for this week going forward My guess is the touchdowns are bringing his price up to a point that is unsustainable, at least for our projections, based on the overall targets. And that's usually where I'm fine being off of a guy. And look, we've run bad on that kind of decision-making in the past, or just like how we kind of weight touchdowns, just because I can remember this happened like with Doug Baldwin last year, the year before, where he was just catching a touchdown every single game. And the targets were like six, seven targets a game. And every single game he was catching a touchdown. And every week you're, you know, preaching from the mountaintops that it's just not going to continue. And then every week he just seems to catch another touchdown. So you can be, I think, simultaneously correct in the thinking on that kind of thing and then look bad in the short term. I mean, it's kind of the same thing with Kamara, you know, like the thinking can be correct and you can still just the way, especially the way the NFL, we talk about this a ton, the way touchdowns are weighted. It only takes one to make you look bad, right? Like from a projection standpoint, it only takes really one touchdown usually for the projections all of a sudden to look completely on their head, because that's the thing that is the least likely thing for a player to happen, and it's the thing that just swings scores the most. So yeah, I mean, he'd be a guy that I'd be fine be low on going forward, just because I just don't think the touchdowns are going to be sustainable. Anything else you saw come out of this week?
Well, the only other guy I wanted to chat with you about was Marvin Jones. You know, people have gone back and forth, so, and we have too, between him, Golden Tate, Galladay's been back. What do you think about Marvin Jones' prospect, given the, you know, the big total performance, the two touches, 109 yards receiving, still a fairly reasonable price going forward. Is he a guy you'd be willing to, you know, start to pay some increasing prices?
Yeah, for? I've struggled. I was auditing a lot of stuff yesterday, and I struggled with where to set some of the Detroit targets because my gut tells me to continue setting them in Golden Tate's favor, and that has just been incorrect. And so this is the other thing that's very difficult about teams' plans and schemes going forward, because a lot of these things can just be matchups, right? Like, you know, a team finding a matchup that they like, and sometimes it looks like it's going to be that matchup on paper, and sometimes it's not. And so, and sometimes the team doesn't know until they start kind of running, the routes are running, and, you know, right, maybe Xavier Rhodes is shadowing Marvin Jones, and maybe it just kind of doesn't matter that game, right? Like, there's just these games can go this way. My gut tells me to keep Golden Tate as like the highest overall target guy on Detroit. And I'm fully willing, I'd be able to be talked out of it. And I think I could probably be wrong about it. And it just still feels correct to me. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think that sounds about how I feel about it too.
Okay, we're going to get out of here. We're going to be back again tomorrow or Thursday. I can't ever remember when we record these podcasts. We'll be back later on.
Football is on Thursday. Yeah.
We'll be back later on this week talking about some of our cash game plays, and then back on Friday. I know that one for sure. A game-by-game breakdown of all the games on the slate. Should be an interesting week of football with all the teams coming back from byes. So be sure to go check those out later in the week, buddy. Week 12 in the books, week 13 coming up. I'm getting excited. It's football still going for it, but we'll be back later in the week. I'll talk to you later.
Later.